This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is already dark, and I have got to have my notes. So I'm just going to jabber until I get home. Should be about 15 minutes, 12, 15 minutes or so. And then we'll talk about our topic once we get in the garage. Because the topic is interesting. It's fun. It's about the brain. What is brain? So from Star Trek, the classic series, Spock's brain is the name of the episode. Great episode. Oh man. Anyways, all is well. It's been a good week. Got some things accomplished this week. Needed to get accomplished and did some rollouts. Let's see. Did some rollouts last week. That went fine. And then this week did some of the technology that's associated with those rollouts. There was one extra little piece. And so we did that. It went through. That seemed to be fine. Yay, seemed to be fine. We are heading into our Christmas break soon. We have one more week at my major client where I work, and then they actually give their employees the whole week off, the week of Christmas. So, building will be shut for an entire week. That's always fun. It's a nice little break. I don't bill, so I don't get paid, but that's okay. That's all right. There are enough benefits to being a consultant that it doesn't matter if I have to pay for my own health insurance and I don't get paid when the building is closed. That's okay. I will take the benefits. There might be some rattling that you'll hear in the back seat. I actually have a rear projection screen in the back that I bought multiple years ago and then handed off to the church to use for a while. They didn't need it anymore, so I'm taking it back home. But it's a bunch of aluminum pieces, and it's in a big plastic box, and it does rattle around a bit. So work is good. I uploaded all the files for book 13, the production version, last night. This weekend, I should be able to get the Kindle version. Yeah, lots of pieces rattling around. Should be able to get the Kindle version done today and tomorrow, and then also the EPUB version. I don't do anything for iBooks. I tried doing stuff for iBooks for a while, but it just got to be ridiculous. And I don't really sell any books, so there's not really any motivation for me to do something for iBooks. So I'll get those uploaded, and then once I get that done, I'll swing back over to book 14 and start my read-through so I can get started writing the second half of book 14. I think I know where I'm going. I think I know where I'm going a little better every day. I'm certainly gathering a lot of information from our present, from our present circumstances with all of the stuff that's going on. It's all very fascinating, and it all isn't immediately applicable, but it's in the genre. So that's fine. Last week was International Day of the Ninja. That was fun. That was fun. There is one aspect of all of it that is a bit humorous to me, and that I'm still working out what I should do. At the end of the day, we inhabit these wonderfully complex, miraculous bodies. And it really doesn't matter at the end of the day what that body looks like, because most of our bodies at least are functioning well enough to keep us alive, and that in itself is a miracle. Life is a miracle. I have always just been astounded when I have seen it happen, and I've only seen it happen in, you know, trying to remember if I've ever seen a human breathe their last breath. I was with my mom when she died, but based by that time she was really gone, and we couldn't rouse her, and her breathing was labored, and I was sitting there writing, and then suddenly I noticed that she didn't seem to be breathing anymore. But I wasn't watching her per se, but I have watched carefully as we put two of our dogs down. One of the dogs we put down, but the situation was quite intense, because Annie, our Weimaraner Labrador mix, which was a really amazing dog, a smart, smart dog. She apparently had gotten in some rat poison or something, and she was hemorrhaging internally. Although afterwards, the doctor really couldn't find out anything, you know. So I was there when we put Annie down, but she was in distress. She couldn't breathe, and she was in distress. So for Abby and Andy, though, they were just old. They were really old. You could tell that they were struggling. But it wasn't active struggling. It was just the groan of old age. And I was with both of them with my wife when we put them down. And we kind of had a standard way that we did that, if two is a standard. And that is that Ned got down on the floor, you know, with the dog right near her so she could pet and talk to the dog. And then I sat in a chair behind her, with my legs on either side of her so that I could have my hands on her shoulders. And then they, you know, they put in the port in the dog's arm, and they come in with this needle filled with stuff. And, you know, my wife's petting this dog and telling the dog what a good dog it was and all that kind of stuff. And they put in the needle, and that dog's head goes down, their eyes go shut, and then the dog is gone. The dog is gone. It's such a fascinating thing to watch. The dog is not there anymore. Everything shuts down. Life. So fascinating. Miracle of life. So, I can't say I'm 100% there, but I'm a good fur piece over 90, being able to just look at anybody, 90%, maybe 95, maybe 98. Being able to just look at anybody and think, this person is a miracle. Just the fact you're alive, miracle. Because you're there. Now, beyond that, you know, we have all these crazy ideas about appearance and, you know, trying to make appearance biology. We've talked about that before. But there is a part of this whole costume thing that's a bit amusing. First of all, a week before last, I was having breakfast with a friend. And, was it last week? I don't know. Anyways, we were talking about the ninja costume. And I showed him a picture of it that I'd got off Amazon. And he kind of grinned and he said, "So, I've noticed that most of the costumes that you show me on Amazon are filled with women." And I said, "Well, yeah." I said, "First of all, I buy costumes for guys and they're not cut for me. I'm too slender. They're just baggy." And I said, "Second of all, I have found that the closer I get a costume cut to my body, the more it makes women laugh. And part of this whole thing is just to make women laugh. So yeah, absolutely. I don't care. It's just cloth. But there is one little kind of side thing with that. And I am not saying this for anyone to give me affirmation or for anyone to disagree with me. I'm not saying one way or another what I look like in tight costumes. I'm not saying anything. But it comes up. So I'm in the ninja costume. And it had pants that were really more leggings than they were pants. And then it kind of had this little top that kind of had a loincloth in front of it. But it was a pretty cool ninja costume. I did go ahead and buy kind of a sleeveless sweatshirt jacket to wear with it that had a hood as well. Because when I was looking up Ninja Day down at the bottom, they said, we suggest these products. And I saw this kind of sleeveless ninja looking jacket thing. And I was like, oh, hey, that's cool. And so that was good. It kind of straightened out the line, you know, from my waist to hip, that curve. It straightened that out because it was just hanging straight and provided a little coverage for my backside. And, you know, so it was fine. I thought it was a good addition. And I do not bring the subject up, but a couple of the ladies, we were laughing and cackling and going on about this, that, and the other. And one of them brought up again, she said, yeah, she said, we're basically all jealous of Phil's legs. So, because we're jealous of his legs. And there was one of the guys who used to be in the auto department there at Walmart. We've gotten to be friends. And he was kind of standing there and he said, well, I said, I can tell you. He said, you know, they're bad. So that's all fine. We just joke and carry on. I do not respond that much to that. But one of my other friends, she literally looked me up and down and shook her head. And she just said, God, you look good in that. I just usually go, well, thanks, and then we move on. I mean, I don't quite know what I'm supposed to say to that, especially since it's just a ratty old body, and I usually also pop off with something like, well, you know, the legs work, and they get me from here to there, and yay, thank God, you know, I'm 62, the legs work. Tomorrow is I'm celebrating World Monkey Day tomorrow. And I do have another outfit that in the pictures is filled with a woman. In fact, this outfit was actually sort of Asian sizing. And I bought the biggest, people said on there, this is Asian sizing, so I bought the biggest one they had. And I actually had to replace the zipper on this thing because I got it zipped up the first time I put it on. And it was fine, but I kind of flexed my shoulders a little bit and I just popped the zipper apart. The next time I got it put on, it felt like the zipper was going to hold, but I was just like, "Now you have popped that once." So I replaced it with an industrial zipper. And that gave me, you know, basically another 3/4 inch. Right down the back, which is what I needed. So, but I made some banana shoes for it, and it's fun. I made myself a little leaf, it's not really a skirt, but it's kind of a jungle leaf covering. And I'm wearing my faux pas gloves, and so it'll be fun. And I made myself a necklace with bananas. So it'll be cute. It'll be cute. People will enjoy it, I hope. But anyway, so all is well there. You know, it's just been a really, really good year. And we're rounding out. I'm set up for next week already for costume day. Let's see. I'm set up for the next week already because that's National Elf. Well, that's Elf Day because it's going to be right before Christmas. Christmas Eve, actually. The next week, January 1st, I'm set up for that, and so now I'm actually working on National Argyle Day, and I have to build some Victorian ruffs, they're called. It's where the ribbon is kind of standing straight up and down, and it's going loopy, loopy, loopy back and forth. So I have to build a neck ruff and two wrist ruffs for that. And again, I have to build some sort of a little covering skirt. But I have all the felt, and none of that's going to be hard. It's just a matter of pounding it out. Have to stuff my jester's hat with fiber fill to get it nice and full. Have to do a little bit of work on the shoes that I have. But that's all fine. I did get a bespoke jester's suit with the diamonds and all the different colors. So it fits really well. So there's no problem with replacing the zippers on that, because it's cut right to me. So that'll be fun. And then the next week, I've already got the pieces for Rubber Ducky Day. Rubber Ducky Day is the third week in January. And then I think the fourth week in January is Polka Dot Day. I've got that outfit from last year. Then the fifth week in January, which there is a fifth week, I think, this time, It may be National Kazoo Day, although I'm not real thrilled with that. I may go hunt around and see if I can find another holiday in there. And then, of course, then it's Wear Something Red Day, and then it's Valentine's Day, and then somewhere in there is Tooth Fairy Day. And it won't be too long before I will have lapped myself and actually been back to where I started last year, and then we'll just start recycling outfits and then just doing stuff. If new stuff comes along, you know, that's cool holidays, we'll just do stuff. So I think I am dangerously close. I am dangerously close to having an outfit for every day of the year. Checking for mail. Anyways, okay, so I'm not quite in the garage yet, but I'm going to be in the garage soon. So let's talk about the brain. What is brain? For the last several weeks, and I think I mentioned this at least once on the podcast, I've been talking to friends about the fact that we really need to remember how the brain works. That, in fact, we like to think of ourselves as receiving input from the world and then simply living in the world, but there's actually another layer in there. And of course, the layer is that we have this simulation engine within us that simulates the world, that actually simulates the world in high degree and connects everything together for us. And that we live in that simulation. And that's why it's so important that you tend that simulation well, that you take care as to what influences are part of that simulation. Because unfortunately, the flesh does have input into that simulation as well. The flesh is very capable of influencing that simulation. And it does it primarily through lies. At least that's what I think at this point. It tells us lies, which changes our experience. And so that, you know, we need to just really pay attention to the lies we're being told and how those influence us, because then those become memories, and then it's easier for us to react the same way the next time. So this article is called Your Brain Doesn't Work the Way You Think It Does. And I've got 16 pages of stuff here. So I'm not going to go over all of this. But I would encourage you to look up the article Your Brain Doesn't Work the Way You Think It Does by Clay Skipper. He has a conversation with neuroscientist Lisa Feldman Barrett on the counterintuitive ways your mind processes reality. So at the very beginning of her new book, 7.5 Lessons About the Brain, psychologist professor Lisa Feldman Barrett writes that each chapter will represent, quote, a few compelling scientific nuggets about your brain and considers what they might reveal about human nature. The author of the article says, though it's an accurate description of what follow, it dramatically understates the degree to which each lesson will enlighten and unsettle you. It's like lifting up the hood on the car to see an engine, except that the car is you and you find the engine doesn't work at all like you thought. For instance, consider the fourth lesson. Your brain predicts almost everything you do. Quote from the book. Neuroscientists like to say that your day-to-day experience is a carefully controlled hallucination, constrained by the world and your body, but ultimately constructed by your brain. And that's, you know, that's basically what I've been saying. Dr. Barrett, who is the University Distinguished Professor at Northeastern and who has research appointments at Harvard Medical School and Massachusetts General Hospital, says it's an everyday kind of hallucination that creates all of your experiences and guides all your action. It's the normal way that your brain gives meaning to the sensory inputs from your body and from the world called sense data, and you're almost always unaware that it's happening. So, the article says people tend to feel like we're reacting to what's actually happening in the world. This is really important. People tend to feel that we're reacting to what's actually happening in the world. But what's really happening is that your brain is drawing on your deep backlog of experience and memory, constructing what it believes to be your reality, cross-referencing it with incoming sense data from your heart, lungs, metabolism, immune system, as well as the surrounding world, and adjusting as needed. And so when you say, well, when this happened, I just felt that way. And you project outward and say, oh, that person made me feel this way, or this made me feel that way. That's not true. I'm off the article now. That's not true. What's actually happening is there is input of some sort, and your brain is pulling in that input. And then it's also layering on top of your experiences and what you're remembering. And then that is creating your experience and your feeling and all those things that are happening at that moment. Other people are not making you feel that way. You are making yourself feel that way. Because of the voices you're listening to, because of the simulation you're listening to. So, you know, there's some really interesting stuff in this article, and I'm already long. So, one of the things the article goes on to say is we experience things. There's a whole bunch of other stuff the article says, but one of the things the article says is we experience things like anger or anxiety as feelings caused by outside events. But really, Dr. Barrett says, quote, emotions don't happen to you. They are made by your brain as you need them. The article goes on to say, that may sound like splitting hairs, but the consequences are quite profound. The more you know about emotions, the more precisely your brain can construct them, so you will feel and act in ways that are very specific to the situation. We talk a lot about handling emotions after they emerge. This is emotion regulation, but understanding emotions as something you construct allows you to influence how they arise in the first place. And this is absolutely true. The old example that I have given over and over and over is the example of road rage. You're driving along, someone cuts you off. Starts up immediately. Okay. What's happening there is that you are actually manufacturing that emotion because you've been told a lie. And the lie you've been told by your flesh, this is not in the article, the lie you've been told by your flesh is that whoever cut you off intentionally. They degraded you. They disrespected you. So you have that response. But you have no idea, if you'll just pause and think about it for a minute, you have no idea why that person cut you off. Maybe it was just an honest mistake. Maybe they just got a call that their spouse is in the hospital. Maybe they've just got a call that their child was in an accident. Maybe they've just got a call that a parent died. There's all kinds of things that could be going through that person's mind. And when you put yourself in that person's shoes and realize there might be a whole bunch of reasons, and maybe it's no reason at all, maybe they just made a dumb mistake, which we all make. Maybe they just made a dumb mistake. Well, if you put yourself in that person's shoes and realize that you have no idea whether or not it was intentional, then all that, it'll just disappear. Completely disappear. Because you are manufacturing that emotion based on your interpretation of what just happened. And unfortunately, even though they don't mention this in the article, unfortunately, that interpretation based on what just happened is in fact, in part, based on information that was given to you by the flesh, and the flesh will always present you with the worst possible information in the worst possible light to get a reaction out of you. So anyways, there's lots and lots of stuff in this article. It's interesting that the person who's writing the article says the brain's most important job is not thinking or seeing or feeling or doing any of those things. Its main job is running a budget for your body to keep you alive and to keep you healthy. Now, when you really dig into what she's saying there, it's part of what she's trying to explain there is the activity of the flesh. Because the anxiousness, the part of it is, which it's an interesting, you know, I wouldn't a part of the brain, certainly. I think a part of the brain certainly is monitoring all those systems. But the thinking part of your brain isn't doing any of that. The subsystems are. And in my little world, the flesh sits between those subsystems and the higher order part of your brain. And so those low-level subsystems, that is a really important part of the brain, but living a successful life doesn't encounter much of that, because you can be hungry, you can be thirsty. What's more important is how you manage what the flesh is trying to tell you about those things, and how you manage from a higher function standpoint of how you're going to react to those things. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. So anyways, a lot of interesting examples. Baseball, batter walks up to the plate, takes a stance at the bat. A major league pitcher throws at a speed of 80 to 100 miles per hour, giving the batter between 4 and 500 milliseconds to react. This is not enough time to see the ball, decide to swing the bat, plan the action, and execute it. But the brain that works by prediction is fast enough to make a baseball possible as a game. Here's what's really happening. Based on all the information that the batter has about the situation, his brain is automatically computing the swing, making a prediction about, in a moment's time, where the ball will be. So in a blink of an eye, his brain predicts the action, then predicts the sensations. Figuratively speaking, his brain predicts, what will I do in a moment from now? And the last time I acted in this way, what did I see? What will I feel in my joint? When the bat strikes the ball, what will I hear? His brain is automatically changing the firing of its own neurons to anticipate the sensory changes that will result from the crack of the ball against the bat. And so what the batter is doing is he's watching the baseball pitcher, and he's interpreting where that ball is going to come and predicting where that ball is going to come by how the guy it leaves his hand and all that kind of stuff. And so he's just adjusting. So the article says predicting and correcting is a much more efficient way to run a system than reacting all the time. So what your brain is doing all the time is making these guesses and then comparing them to the sense data from your body and from the world that is continually arriving as a way of reducing uncertainty, which in turns out is the metabolically efficient thing to do. So, and they show other things like, talk about other things like, when you drink a glass of water, it actually takes about 20 minutes for the water to reach your system, your bloodstream. But when you drink a glass of water, you feel immediately satisfied because your brain goes, okay, that's fine. We're done. So lots of really good stuff in the article. I recommend it. It's very, very interesting. But, you know, the really important thing, and they say this in the article, is that the bottom line is we are more responsible for ourselves than we might think. And as I discussed in the book, we are also more responsible for other people than we might think. So people are going to have all, well, yeah, see, that got into it. So think or want, you know, sometimes you're responsible for something not because the situation is your fault. You're responsible for something because you're the only person who can change the way things are. It's not an issue of culpability. The actions and experiences that your brain makes today become your brain's predictions for tomorrow. So my way of saying that is we make disciples every day. We make disciples every day for good or for bad. And we should move through the day in kindness and gentleness and help and wisdom and patience and long-sufferingness. We should do that. We should just emote that everywhere. Not everybody's going to accept it. But at least maybe you make somebody's experience a little better. And then they carry that experience with them until the next day. And then maybe something in the next day makes their experience a little better. So investing in people, investing yourself in kindness and generosity and love in other people, at least gives them the opportunity to start integrating that into their world experience. So anyways, they do go on and talk about how the fact that the brain can manufacture things to where you're seeing things under anxious situations. That's good to know, because when you're anxious, when you're upset, when you're angry, that's when you have the potential to make some bad decisions and make bad choices. And it's much, much, much better if you just slow yourself down. Anyways, lots of pages. I'm going through all these pages, et cetera, et cetera. And then they get in talking about, you know, the brain managing all these things. So it says, here's a trivial example. Like many people in this country, I'm weary and I'm stressed. But under the hood, my brain is constructing concepts to predict and make sense of what is going on inside my body in relation to the situation I am. My brain could construct an experience of anxiety or depression or hopelessness. But instead, it constructs a concept of an unencumbered body budget. This guides my actions. I need to make sure that I sleep. I need to make sure that I drink enough water. I need to make sure that I exercise, even though I really don't feel like it. I make sure to get enough social contact with those I love. That's one way to go about it. The other way to go about it is to recognize that all that stress that you're feeling and anxiety, that's because your flesh is predicting the absolute possible worst thing that could happen. And that's really what it's telling you under the surface. The sky is falling. Well, you can listen to that. Or you can say, you know, sky may be falling, but on the other hand, things may work out spectacularly well. And you can actually change that. So, et cetera, et cetera. So they have this term, which was an interesting term. Emotional granularity is also, they must have talked about it above, and I'm not going to go back. Emotional granularity is also knowing when not to make an emotion. Instead, my brain is making meaning of the sense data and the effective emotions that they cause as a physical phenomenon. And what does this granularity buy you? It buys you the flexibility to make sense of your sensations and act on them differently depending on the context, tailoring your actions to the situation you are in. And that's basically, that is basically the same concept that I've been talking about. Pause, step back. This isn't new with me. You know, meditation, centeredness, cognitive behavioral therapy. I forgot what it was called. All of this stuff is really about pausing, separating yourself from those emotions. And in my world, I always say, and then figure out what lie the flesh is telling you. If you're having a negative emotion, any kind of negative emotion, stress, anxiety, anger, rage, sexual impurity, all those things, figure out what the lie is that the flesh is trying to tell you. And if you can figure out what that lie is, you can actually take away its power and take away the effect of the on your emotions. Anyways, so there you go. Interesting article. Go read it. It's good. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home today.